An excellent wife who can find? She's far more precious than jewels. The heart of her husband trusts in her, and he will have no lack of gain. She does him good and not harm all the days of her life. She seeks wool and flax and works with willing hands. She's like the ships of the merchants. She brings food from afar. She rises while it is yet night and provides food for her household and portions for her maidens. She considers a field and buys it. With the fruit of her hand, she plants a vineyard. She dresses herself with strength and makes her arms strong. She perceives that her merchandise is profitable. Her lamp does not go out at night. She puts her hands to the distaff, and her hands hold the spindle. She opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. She's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them. She delivers sashes to the merchant. Strength and dignity are her clothing, and she laughs at the time to come. She opens her mouth with wisdom, and the teaching of kindness is on her tongue. She looks well to the ways of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceitful, and beauty is vain. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands, and let her works praise her in the gates. May the Lord bless the reading of his word. It's with a little trepidation that I venture into a sermon using this passage. Many women hear these 21 verses and feel overwhelmed with a sense of inadequacy in comparison with such an amazing person. Let me just say right now to every woman in this room, every woman, you are a version in some way of this amazing person. I've preached on this passage before. In fact, I preached from it here at ABC perhaps 15 years ago, using a sermon that I had, I'm a glutton for punishment, I guess, using a sermon that I had first preached in the early 90s at a previous church. I had similar trepidation here at ABC because after that first time in 1991, I was confronted by two ladies, two friends of mine who worked together and had a chance to talk about things, by the way. They felt that I was holding up to them up to a higher and therefore unfair standard that they were not capable of. Apparently, as I spoke, instead of being encouraged, which was my intention, they felt worse and worse. While I felt that I was honoring women with my words, I was instead inflicting them with guilt for never reaching the pinnacle of perfect womanhood described in Proverbs 31. I was deflated because I had deflated them. I wasn't trying to place undue pressure on them. The fact was, or so I hoped, My sermon was saying, if this is what the women we love and the women who serve us and minister to us are doing, then let's help them. Let's not take them for granted. I missed the mark, and they obviously missed my point. So let me say this, ladies. I'm not holding you up to any kind of expectation or standard. In my view, you're already there, okay? Instead, I'm pointing out why we should rise up and call you blessed. Your gifting and your uniqueness needs to be celebrated and honored and certainly never taken for granted. And that's my intention on this day where we celebrate mothers and mother figures. And that covers every woman in this room. The writer of this particular proverb is probably not Solomon, nor is it Lemuel, who we read about in the first 10 verses of this chapter. It is, however, a soaring tribute to a wife who personifies excellence, and it just so happens that it comes in the closing verses of a book of the Bible where, sadly, it shows women in a pretty negative light all the way through. If you read it, women are described as temptresses or nagging nuisances who are compared to dripping faucets and the like. One proverb even claims it's better to live in the corner of a housetop than in a house shared with a quarrelsome wife. Don't try that. Guys, don't try that word. That proverb doesn't work in an argument, okay? No, I don't have personal experience. I've not tried that. While quarrelsome wives and tempting adulteresses are not unknown, it is my opinion that Solomon, who was the author of most of these proverbs, was overwhelmed by women, and he was the one that was completely responsible for his situation. It will be in another sermon that I will preach before this series is over, that I will point out that this man, this King Solomon, who was so wise, was so completely unwise in his rejection of God's direction in his life, especially in the area of marriage and relationships. He had over 1,000 wives, concubines, and other women who vied for his attention and indeed stole it away from his relationship with God. It's good they didn't have Mother's Day back then, because he was the wisest man and the richest man, but he wouldn't have been if he had to buy bouquets for 1,000 women. The cacophony that came from his harem, and that's how it's often referred, would drive any person to distraction, and it's no wonder Solomon often wrote with such, well, read Ecclesiastes, and you find some despair in there and some jadedness. Solomon's vision was clouded. That's why I'm grateful that Proverbs concludes with a soaring picture of the gift that womanhood brings to humanity. With that in mind, let's look at the reasons to rise up and call her blessed. Soak this up, ladies, and don't take it as a reason for guilt. Instead, receive the honor. First of all, don't take her for granted. An excellent or capable wife is hard to find, according to the this writer, more precious than jewels. And this makes a simple point. Don't take her for granted. Husbands, don't forget it. Kids, don't forget it. You've been blessed with a jewel. Next, I'm going through this verse by verse, kind of. She's trustworthy. We live in a world that is untrusting. The proliferation of wild conspiracy theories and distrust of government and distrust of authority of any kind comes from somewhere. Often it comes from the actual untrustworthiness of, in part, by those entities. But often the person who struggles with trust has become that way because of a breach of trust by someone significant in their past. The trustworthy woman does good and no harm. Those who know her learn trust and learn how to be trustworthy. Notice how skilled she is. Not everyone can be a wonderful seamstress or a wonderful cook or a skilled teacher. The plain truth is, not everybody can be everything this woman described in our text is. In fact, probably you fall short on some in some place here. After all, I'm certain that there are only two. I know in this congregation, I can't say that there's no one who's ever spun wool. Okay? So I'm certain that there are only about two or three of you whose name start with N and start with N and end with Owakowski, who have spun wool and have made things. There's only two or three of you can do that in this congregation. I know that some of you are great seamstresses and have clothing and quilts to show for it. But not everyone is skilled in that way. Some are good cooks who thrive on kitchen creations, but others cook to provide for loved ones, like this lady here in Proverbs 31, who gets up long before daylight to provide food for her family. The point is, each of you have unique skills that are blessing to those that you love. And that is why, when she utilizes her gifting and skills, make sure that she knows how appreciated she is. There it is. Again, don't take her for granted. Similarly, notice how resourceful she is. In a society where women are often viewed, were often viewed as little more than property, this woman here sought out wool and flax for making clothing for her family. She also knew where the food was to be found. She also, that she needed to bring in and harvest. She even purchases a field. She plants a vineyard in verse 16. This doesn't sound like an oppressed or put upon member of the weaker sex. Instead, she's a go-getter who knows what needs to be done, and she does it with ease. All the while, she doesn't eat the bread of idleness. Our Lady doesn't let the grass grow under her feet. Notice also her business acumen. She skillfully manages the profit in what she makes and what she produces on the farm. As I just said, she knows how to get things done and how to do them, or who she can get to do the things that need to be done, because she's resourceful. And she meets adversity head on. Listen, she's not afraid of snow for her household, for all her household are clothed in scarlet. She makes bed coverings for herself. Her clothing is fine linen and purple. Snow in Jerusalem is not unheard of. And certainly it didn't mean school clothings or snow days 3,000 years ago. But it did mean that it was cold. And the people of Israel are far less prepared for cold than your average Ohioan is. But the Proverbs 31 woman was ready for it. Her people were warmed and clothed. She saw it coming. She laughed at it. She laughs at the time to come, it says. She's not frightened by the future. Verse 30 refers to her as a woman who fears the Lord. And a woman of God is not afraid of a future that is in the hands of her maker. She is resourceful because she has a rock solid faith. And she's generous. It says here, she opens her hand to the poor and reaches out her hands to the needy. Not only is she alert for the needs of her own loved ones, her heart is open to care for those who are not part of her household, maybe even strangers. She's a woman of God, so she doesn't hold back. And she's a woman of wisdom. She has lived life, and she's a keen observer of people, and it has cultivated a depth and knowledge that's obvious when she speaks. But notice in that same verse, verse 26, that her wisdom comes anointed with kindness. That's why it's wisdom rather than merely spouting knowledge. A woman like this is her husband's best advisor and her children's wisest teacher. In fact, she's the go-to mentor, because when she talks, people listen. I have to give honor to my wife for this. She's my best advisor. She's my best fan. Don't mess with me. She is also my best advisor. She gives me the most wise counsel. Enough said. But I can say this about her. She adds value to everyone. Her husband is known in the gates where he sits among the elders of the land. He's sitting there while she's doing all this other stuff. He didn't get there on his own. His wife speaks into his life and makes him look really good. Her children rise up and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women have done excellently, but you surpass them all. That's a tribute to that guy. They're good words. It's not her intention. But these people in her life can't help but give her praise because of what she brings to their lives. The words of her husband are not idle talk. They are praise of a blessed man who knows what kind of gift he has. This is the gift we celebrate on Mother's Day. It's more than a Hallmark holiday. It's more than a dozen roses and a meal that she did not have to cook. It's a realization that charm is deceitful and beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. We celebrate you, women of God. We celebrate you, women of God. We know that you're not this woman here in Proverbs 31. For one thing, you're 3,000 years newer. And new versions are always better, right? This woman here in Proverbs 31 is an ideal composite of the woman of God. But let me just say this. You're close. So we give you of the fruit of your hands, and let your works praise you from the mountaintops. Let's rise up and call her blessed. Amen. Amen. Let's rise up and pray.